Gerald Black had taken his degree in etheric physics the year before, and in common with his entire generation of physicists, found himself engaged in the problem of the drive. He now made a proper addition to the general atmosphere of these meetings on Hyperbase. In his stained white smock, he was half rebellious and wholly uncertain. His stocky strength seemed striving for release, and his fingers, as they twisted each other with nervous yanks, might have forced an iron bar out of True. Major General Kallner sat beside him. The two from U.S. Robots faced him. Black said, "I'm told that I was the last to see Nestor 10 before he vanished. I take it you want to ask me about that?" Dr. Calvin regarded him with interest. "You sound as if you were not sure, young man. Don't you know whether you were the last to see him?" "He worked with me, ma'am, on the field generators, and he was with me the morning of his disappearance. I don't know if anyone saw him after about noon. No one admits having done so. Do you think anyone's lying about it?" "I don't say that. But I don't say that I want the blame of it either." His dark eyes smoldered. "There's no question of blame. The robot acted as it did because of what it is. We're just trying to locate it, Mr. Black, and let's put everything else aside. Now, if you've worked with the robot, you probably know it better than anyone else. Was there anything unusual about it that you noticed? Had you ever worked with robots before?"
"I've worked with other robots we have here. The simple ones. Nothing different about the Nestors except that they're a good deal cleverer. And more annoying."
"Annoying? In what way?"
"Well, perhaps it's not their fault. The work here is rough, and most of us get a little jagged. Fooling around with hyperspace isn't fun."
He smiled feebly, finding pleasure in confession.
"We run the risk continually of blowing a hole in normal space-time fabric and dropping right out of the universe, asteroid and all."
"Sounds screwy, doesn't it?"
"Naturally, you're on edge sometimes."
"But these Nestors aren't. They're curious. They're calm. They don't worry. It's enough to drive you nuts at times. When you want something done in a tearing hurry, they seem to take their time. Sometimes, I'd rather do without."
"You say they take their time. Have they ever refused an order?"
"Oh, no."
Hastily. "They do it all right. They tell you when they think you're wrong, though. They don't know anything about the subject but what we taught them, but that doesn't stop them. Maybe I imagine it, but the other fellows have the same trouble with their Nestors."
General Kallner cleared his throat ominously. "Why have no complaints reached me on the matter, Black?" The young physicist reddened. "We didn't really want to do without the robot, sir, and besides, we weren't certain exactly how such minor complaints might be received." Bogart interrupted softly.
"Anything in particular happened the morning you last saw it?"
There was a silence. With a quiet motion, Calvin repressed the comment that was about to emerge from Kallner and waited patiently. Then Black spoke in blurting anger.
"I had a little trouble with it. I'd broken a Kimball tube that morning and was out 5 days of work. My entire program was behind schedule. I hadn't received any mail from home for a couple of weeks. And he came around wanting me to repeat an experiment I had abandoned a month ago. He was always annoying me on that subject, and I was tired of it. I told him to go away. And that's all I saw of him."
"You told him to go away?" asked Dr. Calvin with sharp interest. "In just those words, did you say, go away? Try to remember the exact words."
There was apparently an internal struggle in progress. Black cradled his forehead in a broad palm for a moment, then tore it away and said defiantly, "I said, go lose yourself."
Bogart laughed for a short moment.
"And he did, huh?"
But Calvin wasn't finished. She spoke cajolingly.
"Now we're getting somewhere, Mr. Black. But exact details are important in understanding the robot's actions. A word, a gesture, an emphasis may be everything. You couldn't have said just those three words, for instance, could you? By your own description, you must have been in a hasty mood. Perhaps you strengthened your speech a little. The young man reddened.
Well, I may have called it a few things.
Exactly what things?
Oh, I wouldn't remember exactly. Besides, I couldn't repeat it. You know how you get when you're excited.
His embarrassed laugh was almost a giggle.
I sort of have a tendency to strong language.
That's quite all right, she replied with prim severity. At the moment, I'm a psychologist. I would like to have you repeat exactly what you said, as nearly as you remember, and even more important, the exact tone of voice you used.
Black looked at his commanding officer for support, found none. His eyes grew round and appalled. But I can't.
You must.
Suppose, said Bogart with ill-hidden amusement, you address me. You may find it easier.
The young man's scarlet face turned to Bogart. He swallowed.
I said...
His voice faded out. He tried again.
I said... And he drew a deep breath and spewed it out hastily in one long succession of syllables. Then, in the charged air that lingered, he concluded almost in tears, more or less... I don't remember the exact order of what I called him, and maybe I left out something or put in something, but that was about it.
Only the slightest flush betrayed any feeling on the part of the robo-psychologist. She said, I am aware of the meaning of most of the terms used. The others, I suppose, are equally derogatory.
I'm afraid so, agreed the tormented Black.
And in among it... You told him to lose himself.
I meant it only figuratively.
I realize that. No disciplinary action is intended, I am sure.
And at her glance, the general, who 5 seconds earlier had seemed not sure at all, nodded angrily.
You may leave, Mr. Black. Thank you for your cooperation.